Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ron Martin. Boys, I get the feeling we're a little glum this morning. We're a little sad. We're a little cranky. We're a little gentle and lowly. That being said,
I don't know if gentle is the right word. Lowly.
Yeah, lowly. We're just lowly. Maybe that'll be the hot new book of 2022.
Not gentle, just lowly.
Instead of gentle and lowly, just
lowly.
Just
without
lowly.
The gentle.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Maybe that'll be our follow-up to our smash hit essay collection. But boys, before we get into this sad and lowly conversation, I want to talk about a not sad thing, Pipe. That's Redbud City Coffee. It's the opposite of sad. It's coffee. It's hipster. It's sourced from interesting places. Tell us about Redbud City Coffee.
Yeah, we've been sort of low key coffee moguls for years now.
That's with
one coffee partner who then decided to go a different direction with his business, and then with Redbud for the last year or so. So listeners, if you go to redbudcoffee.com, you can check out their variety of roasts there. They're all single origin roasts from around mostly Central and South America, and then occasionally some African roasts. The Brazilian is a standard one that they have. It's my favorite one. It's a family-run business based out of Central Illinois, and they do really it's fairly priced. They do really good roasts, and if you use the code HAPPYRANT at checkout, you get a 10% discount. The other thing they do is they sell actually in bulk quantity. So if you wanted to do something like get coffee provided for your church, you want to make that your standard, they can do that. So it's not just the 12-ounce bags that are kind of standard in the kitchen. So again, go to redbudcoffee.com, check out their roasts. I recommend the Brazilian honey. Use the code HAPPYRANT as one word, HAPPYRANT at checkout for a 10% discount off your entire purchase. You won't regret it. It's pretty great.
Man, that's big, Pipe. That's a good ad read, too. Just solid radio. Speaking of next big things, boys, that Carl Truman book, the one that's like a boat anchor all about culture, and it'll take you like 2.5 years to read. Did you guys read that?
No, it didn't come out. 2.5 years ago, I haven't had time
exactly.
to finish. I mean, I haven't had time to start either, but I definitely haven't.
Dude, that one hits at a level that's really interesting to me, which is like, I feel like that gets this year's award for the most like fake liked book. You know what I mean? Where you read like 12 pages of it and you're like, Judas, this is a slog. But you talk about it as though you've read it and liked it.
It's the reputation.
It's the reputation. Like,
it's like what everybody in seminary does when they get their book list and they're like, yeah, I read everything.
Totally, totally. Meaning I read 12 pages of that. And then...
Did you read it, Big T?
Well, interestingly enough, I borrowed it from my pastor. And he warned me about it ahead of time. And I'm a good reader. I'm a relatively good reader and smart person, I think. But like, he was like, now, this is a slog, dude. And my pastor is a brilliant guy. And he's like, this took me forever to get through. And... yeah, lo and behold, I grabbed it because it did look interesting. You know, the subject matter is very interesting, and it was in theory. But yeah, it was a tough read.
You're reading sentences like 2 and 3 times just to like kind of get your way to the next paragraph. Kind of a read,
dude. Yeah, that, and then also just giving up, which is kind of my status with it now. I've given up. But
is a book good if it's also
a
slog?
That's a great question.
Not to me.
It has to be readable. It has to be readable. You know?
It does.
But again, readable to who? So it's like when I'm thinking about the people on social that said, oh man, I love this. I read it in a week or whatever. It's like, well, we're getting into nerd Twitter now and all of that kind of stuff. So it's like, yeah, I don't.
Dude, nerd Twitter.
Yeah, nerd Twitter finished it in an afternoon with a glass of iced tea. You know?
Yeah. It's like a beach book
correct.
For nerd Twitter.
Yeah.
You know?
And, you know, here's a...
Interesting.
Not that anybody wants to see them.
But here, that's true. Nerd Twitter at the
beach. How come nerd Twitter... Here's a question, man. So on nerd Twitter Truman's book, I'll tell you, man, even nerd Twitter struggles with Carl. You know what I mean? It's not like nerd Twitter is constantly, like, promoting Carl. But that's as close as they got with that book, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Wow. So they struggle with like what he's saying or how he's saying it.
Well, you'd think they would love even how he's saying it because he's just so like no nonsense and so dry and so just, you know, I'm trying so hard to like crack a smile as I'm like typing this sentence. Yeah, I don't know, you know, but like I don't know. Pipe, you might have a better like take on this, being that you were in the, as we shall call it, industry, you know, for so many years. But like what Carl has, he has a fascinating relationship with, I think, everybody tribally, if we just want to use that word, you know what I mean? So I feel like people respect him like crazy, but everybody's kind of afraid of him. And nobody wants to say that they love him too much, even if they would say, like you just said, T, like, I don't know, the book's probably brilliant. I slogged through 12 pages. I had to read every sentence like 46 times, and I finally gave up. It's not that it's bad. It's that it's hard, and I don't have time for that much difficulty in my life, you know?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Well, Carl's like the anti, the anti-tribe guy.
Yeah.
He, you know, he has theological convictions that would align with kind of the generally reformed world, but he says enough things that make, you know, us uncomfortable. He's kind of curmudgeonly and cranky, so he keeps people, and he's academic, so like he just sort of falls outside of all of the comfort zones. Yeah. So he's too cantankerous and not kind of, he doesn't fall into any mold to make people happy. So even like Nerd Twitter, generally like they agree about certain things. Like there's sort of rules to this game and he doesn't play by their rules. He's too academic for the, like the gentle and lowly crowd, which at this point is like 7 million people. Congratulations, Dane. And he's kind of, he just doesn't fit anywhere.
Yeah.
And so he makes everybody nervous. And so everybody's like, this is great, but there's always kind of a, you know, like you get guys like Dougie Fresh who love to be cantankerous, but like they gather people around being against stuff. Yeah. Like we're going to go light stuff on fire and all the young disenfranchised men say hooray. Truman's not like that. He's like, no, go away, young disenfranchised men. You're part of the problem, not the solution. And so he just doesn't fit anywhere. He's kind of like, he should be wearing like camel hair and eating.
Dude, locusts. He's the ultimate zag guy. Like while everyone else is zigging, even like the college that he works at is kind of a, like a
what? Like what is it? What like, do you mean? He's not a, like, where does he teach? What is it?
It's just random. He's at Grove City College in Pennsylvania, which is a great school, but it's just not like, you know, Wheaton or Westmont or like one of the quote unquote
premier
like,
schools,
big contenders, you know? I think it's a great university. Like reputationally, it's elite, but like I don't know, it's just not one of the mainstreamers. You know,
isn't Grove City one that's also kind of a like libertarian? I don't mean that politically. Like they just sort of they're not going to take government funding. They're just going to do things their own way. So. They just it's like a total sort of
is it
march
like
to the beat of their own drum?
Is it like
school
the
generally in a good direction?
Universities? Is that what you're saying, Pipe?
No. It's not like that. I don't think. I just think.
No, they just, I think they came up with a funding model that allows them to not take like government grants. And so they don't have to sort of bend to the, they don't have to kiss the ring or kiss anything else for that matter. And like that talk about things that fit Carl Truman well is you can do whatever I want in a generally orthodox and good direction.
Yeah. Actually, wow. Sounds awesome. Wild. Tip of the cap to Carl, man. He's living.
It's the book we'd all like to write if we knew how.
It's true. We definitely don't know how, given the book
Let
that
me
we
just
wrote.
For myself in saying I do not and will never know how to write that book.
That's right. Although we do know how to write a certain kind of book, which we're basically done with. So shout out to our book. Little pre-promo work there.
Listeners, you can expect it in 2026.
Rate, review, fawn. Put it on your calendars. It's coming in 5 years. All right, boys, are we, we're nine and a half minutes into this thing. Are we going to do this critical race theory deal? This came through the group chat through the pre-show production meeting this morning and we all kind of waffled a little bit, which is what we're supposed to do. And then we were like, we've been studiously avoiding this thing for 2 years. Or however long it's existed, and Maybe we should talk about it. And the way Pipe framed the question was great. So I'm just going to read it off the group chat. The question was, and Pipe really dialed it up here, man. I could tell he was having some fun with this. One more, comma, and this might make you both choke, colon. Is critical race theory really a big deal? So there it is, boys.
Big T, big T.
We're teeing it up. Big T teeing it up. I don't know. I guess I can get us started in saying that, and this is probably a thousand kinds of wrong. All right. So we can get the caveats out of the way up front. But in my life, in terms of the black athletes that I work with, it's not even a thing. Like, not one person has ever asked me to like lament or sit in my discomfort or any of those sort of self-flagellating things that we're supposed to do with critical race theory. And I think it's because sports is very manifestly about problem solving. And so we're constantly solving problems together, which if you like football is a really fun process. And if I don't teach them how to play their positions, then we're all going to be lamenting. And the great thing about sports is when you lose, you lament together. When you win, you celebrate together. And that's kind of the addictive quality of it. So yeah, I would say in my life, it's really not even a thing, except when I'm around a certain kind of white academic, then it's very much a thing. So I don't know. What about you guys?
Well, I feel like there's a... Well, we need to acknowledge, first of all, you've said get all the caveats out of the way. We are three white males who are kind of staunchly, firmly middle class and generally on the more conservative end of definitely the theological spectrum and whatever. So we are in the camp who should be profoundly threatened by this thing if it is the boogeyman that they, whoever they are, has made it out to be. I would like to go on record saying I'm not at all threatened by this faux boogeyman. Mm. And in large part because I haven't heard a single critic of critical race theory, like the popular ones, define it.
Mm.
Nobody knows what it is. Who is mad at it? They're mad at a whole variety of things, which from what I understand, from the amount, like I've done some reading to try to understand what is this thing. From what I understand, what most people are scared of is not even, it's like 6 degrees of separation from what critical race theory is. So I guess I'd like to say, no, I'm not threatened by it. I don't know of a single church that has crumbled because of this, which is apparently the great threat to the American evangelical church, is that this is it's supplanting the gospel, which sounds like horse manure to me. I don't see that anywhere. You mentioned the certain white academics. That seems to be the crowd who, for whom this is a mm-hmm. thing, because it's an academic theory, right. You know, kind of functions at the grad school sure. level. I guess I'm just not overly bothered by this thing. And it feels a little bit like the, you know, like McCarthyism, when there was a communist behind every, you know, behind every door and in locked in every closet, and we're going to find them all. It kind of feels like that in terms of like, oh, we don't really know what this communism thing
there
is.
There may be that now.
And we're
actually
just kind of accusing everybody.
We should bring back McCarthyism maybe. But
yeah, those were good days for America in so many ways.
Well, and these are tremendous days for America. But to your point, Pipe, it's a very good point. It actually reminds me of postmodernism circa like 15 years ago. Remember that whole deal? Where like the word postmodern stood in for like whatever scary thing you wanted to make it
for whatever I disagree with
exactly, and I think I played a small role in making it do that. So shout out to me, but Big R, where are you
oh,
on
man,
this?
I don't know. You know, Yeah,
you do. Quit.
I don't know what Pipe
bets.
Said in some ways. The new McCarthyism is I think there's some crossover with that theory about the theory that we're theorizing about right now. Mm-hmm. You know, gosh, man. It feels it feels like something to distract from something bigger going on. And so if you've taken even like a dive into the shallow end of this thing, it just feels like the people that are super upset about it are, it's a way to distract from something that has gone, you know, undealt with. And again, this could just dive us deeper and, you know, walk us down, you know, a million different rabbit trails. But I mean, the idea that critical race theory is, you know, one of the greatest threats to, you know, evangelicalism it feels like it's casting a blind eye at other issues that are actually threatening the church. And then again, break down what threatening the church means, because according to scripture, nothing can really threaten the church because God builds it, and what God builds is never under threat. And so we believe that. I know the three of us believe that. And so we're not going to be standing with that crowd that's, you know, always trying to find like the boogeyman that's ready to, you know, destroy the gospel, tear down the church, and, you know, create a really at the end of the day, you know, sort of an American landscape that's just a little less comfortable for us than what we've enjoyed over the last, you know, 40 or 50 years. And I think it, I think we want to be careful. We want to learn about what these things are. We want to say, hey, is there anything we can learn from it? Is there something to critical race theory that it contains that we can go, hey, I think there's some truth in there. Is there something when you look at it broadly that you have to say, man, I can't adopt this as a theory or as a philosophy in my life. And I think there's something down the middle that I think I would like to arrive at, which I think a lot of people would like to arrive at without being an alarmist and without thinking everything's just going to hell in a handbasket. And I it's always that middle ground that you're trying to find with these things. If you can, I think some of us who are engaging in these conversations, and I've been in a lot of these conversations over the past year, I think there really is like this middle road, and there's going to be a lot of ultra far right reformed-y kind of conservatives that would disagree with that. And those are the people that, you know, are making all the noise and the racket. And, I would say, pass the ketchup, man. I want to eat.
Is that who's making the noise? Some fries here.
So, you know, it's the Owen Strands of the world and, you know, all of that are just going haywire over this whole thing, you know? And,
Vody Bauckham came out with a book called Fault Lines, which has been selling like gangbusters to everybody who is predisposed to, dislike anything having to do with like systemic racism, which is not the same as critical race theory, but they're kind of tangentially related. And because Vody's black, it gives white conservatives sort of a, hey, look what this guy says thing. They love to kind of jump on his words that way. And so, yeah, there's a bunch of that, but then there's all this other stuff mixed in. Like Owen loves to go after wokeness as like an anti-gospel thing, but again, with a super fuzzy definition of it. And it's this whole, like, there's this whole category of like race is uncomfortable. And so when we can slap derogatory and villainous labels on it, like if we can label wokeness and CRT, those are the two villainous labels, then we get to dismiss the whole thing instead of, like Ronnie said, kind of engaging an actual issue of both society and soul. And that's, you know, that's not anybody's comfortable place. And, you know, coming from the white perspective, there's a sense of like we've been villainized, so we're now going to push back and villainize these theories or these terms. And it's all kind of asinine in the way that it's being handled. I don't know that outside of an academic realm, I don't think I've ever heard a fruitful conversation about critical race theory. You know, in terms like, and at that level, it's the kind of thing that like 1% of people would understand. It's like Carl Truman talking about any theory, and it doesn't affect most people every day, and yet it's being kind of pulled down into the like the bottom shelf where people are kind of wrestling or haggling about this thing that they have no actual concept of. It makes me wonder, like, what is the What is like the red flag we can wave to get like the mad bull of conservatism to chase something else instead? Like we had postmodernism, you know, we had an emergent church. Now can we get something and wave it so that they move off of CRT and go charge at something else? Because this is getting tiresome.
It is tiresome. And I think it's like anything we, you know, to bring it back more broadly, right? It's like we love distractions and we love self-justification so much. And, you know, anytime we can find something to, you know, blow a whistle on that sort of gets the attention off of things that have gone undealt with in our lives or as a church or as a movement, man, we just seem to be really drawn to that rather than just stopping, pausing and saying, hey, if there's a whole people group that's saying something, why don't we just listen for a minute and just kind of hear their lament, hear what they're saying, be humble, shut up for 1 second. And stop trying to justify, like, you know, everything we've done over the last, you know, X number hundred of years, and take responsibility for what we can take responsibility for, and just listen for a minute, and not have to devise all of these other counter systems and responses that just takes, you know, sort of the emphasis off the people that are actually, you know, hurting, you know, over some of these things. And we just really, we're really bad at that as the church. You know, we're really bad about just pausing and for once in our lives, like not saying something and just listening. And I think this is one of those moments, at least that we're going to be able to look back on and go, oh man, we could have responded so differently to this. And, we didn't. So here's an example, right? So last summer I had a guy that was accusing me of critical race theory, even though I had literally never heard the term. I didn't know what it was. And I proceeded to take, and no joke, wait for it, I proceeded to take 2 3-4 hour walks. This was in the height of the pandemic. I took 2 3-4 hour walks with this guy while he was telling me that I was a critical race theorist, while I was saying, but can you just tell me what it is though? Because maybe I am, I don't know, but I don't even know what it is. And we got into this debate literally for 8 hours, him telling me something that I didn't know what it was. I didn't think I was, but I said, you know, I want to have this conversation with you. And then he ended up telling me something that I wasn't, that I still don't know what it was he was trying to communicate to me about at the end of the day. And it all rooted down to, you know, somehow to John MacArthur. He left the church, you know, a month later. And here I am, you know, that's just one example of like how twisted and confusing and how it was sort of weaponized as a way to say, hey, we can't find unity because I think you're something that you don't even know exists, that you are, that I'm not even going to give you the opportunity to talk and discuss and to come up with any sort of reasonable conversation to, you know, work our way through this. And that's the kind of ridiculousness. And if you talk to other pastors and other leaders, that's the kind of ridiculousness that a lot of people have experienced over the last year. And it's like it verges on insanity. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's insane. Like I, you know, like this. Yeah.
When it's such a misconstrued sense of proportion, you know, in terms of like eternal truths that matter versus, you know, blip on the radar cultural hotbed issues. And I don't mean that race is that. I mean that this weirdo accusation about critical race theory is. And so when I was going through sort of the candidating process to be called as a pastor at Emmanuel. So I was already at the church. People generally knew me, but there was, you know, we did these Q&A things and whatever, so people could kind of get whatever questions answered they wanted to. And there was one that was, it was an anonymous question that was submitted, which is, by the way, not great. Anonymous questions to pastors are almost never good. And it was basically like, where do you stand on dangerous issues to the church like critical race theory? So I'm candidating to be an assistant pastor at a church. You know, the whole point is like, how did you come to know the Lord? Tell us about your family, you know, theological education. Where do you stand on the gospel? These kind of things. And then this is the dangerous issue that gets raised by this anonymous question asker. And I just, even when I got, I just sort of laughed when I got it because I'm like, well, I'm not going to dismiss the question, but there's the sense of proportion is so backwards because that's the thing that has like eaten up this person's mind in terms of fear for the church. And this is what's dividing us. And it's kind of absurd because that's only true if you let it. It's only divisive in the church if you let it be. And if you just say, yeah, I mean, it's there are people who study that, and we should have fruitful conversations about race and about injustice and about different things. Where's the threat? But people are just, they can't even get there. They're just hung up on this thing, which is wild to me.
T, comment. you're awful quiet, man. I don't know if you're eating something or you just finished like the next chap on our book or where you at, baby.
Baby, I'm just sitting and listening and just resisting the urge to come back with some argument. I'm just listening, you know. I'm doing what quote unquote conservatives should do, I guess. I don't know. I'm being glib, but yeah, I don't know. I think we've said it all.
Ted, I appreciated the way you started this, though, because you didn't start it with big issue. You started it with when I talk to the players that I coach who have, you know, they're black, you're white, they have a different background than you do, et cetera. Like this, it recategorizes things. And I kind of feel like that's the premise for where the conversation ought to be in terms of like when I talk to people who are different than me and I hear their perspective, .. That I feel like is where we've gone off the rails in a significant way.
Yeah.
Is you started with the place we probably should have concluded with, which is that that seems fruitful. We should do that.
Yeah, I mean it presupposes a level of interest in another person. And I think, you know, and we sound like broken records to some degree on this because it always kind of goes back to the performative aspects of life in 2021, but a conversation about critical race theory isn't about the other person as much as it's about me and how it can make me look. Whereas, I don't know, coaching, teaching, pastoring, right? It is fundamentally about someone else. And I think in that it can be really healthy. But yeah, I don't know. You know what I'm proud of, boys? I'm proud of us just for doing this. It was like a little Band-Aid we needed to rip off, right? We needed to do it.
You mean the last group of people that have entered into this conversation? Literally the last, die now because we have finally spoken to it.
Dude, I actually think it will die now because typically when like we get around to addressing things like this, they're on the death rattle. So maybe this is a good thing. Anyway.
What is the opposite of cutting edge? Because that's what we are.
Blunt.
like butt end of the
exactly.
handle. We're the butt end of the handle on this.
Exactly.
College rule paper.
Yeah. Yeah. We're the soft, flabby edge of this issue. And there you have it. So I have an issue too. Just a real kind of cutting edge one that I need to talk about, which is just from a production standpoint, boys, we're 27 minutes into this deal. If we wrap it now, it's a real short app. We could end on a little lighter note, which might be nice. So let's do like 10 minutes on what we're watching, reading, listening to. Before we close, what might be our worst app in a long time?
We say that often.
We do.
So, I mean, are we just trying to set new...
Are we our own worst critics, boys?
I think it was horrible. I think it was just more serious.
No, I don't think it was horrible. It was,
yeah.
It's just a topic you hate. That's what.
Well, yeah. I mean, to be fair, I mean, I don't hate it. That would make me a horrible person.
Make you a critical race
theorist. So yes. I don't know. I'm just sitting with it. You know, I'm just listening.
Yeah, boogeyman.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the bad guy. I am. I mean, I am the bad guy.
Can we all just agree?
Well, totally. You guys are the bad guy.
I mean,
too,
that just depends we land on critical race theory, whether we're the bad guy or not.
If you say that I'm the bad guy, you're sort of putting yourself forward as the good guy. And
not if I'm posturing as woke, however, in which case I have great virtue and you are.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, you guys have incredible virtue and I'm a terrible guy.
Yeah.
So that's the dynamic of the group, you know. All right, what are we reading, listening to, or watching? And if you say something critical race theory related, you're kicked off the show for the rest
reading
of your life.
Reading fault lines.
Yeah.
No, I just finished not too long ago a book called Anxious People by Frederick. I don't know how to say his last name. If it's Bachman or Bachman.
That guy's good,
go with
dude.
Bachman. Yeah. I've never read anything by him that I didn't think was kind of brilliant in its own right. He just has the kind of quirkiest, most observant way of writing humanity of any author I've read in recent years. And so it's like describing the plots of his novels is kind of pointless because they're just a premise for him to write incredibly interesting characters in a really funny and also heartfelt way. He managed to be like make you really laugh and then really feel for the characters. Yeah. So he's probably in my top three or four favorite authors currently. And Anxious People was just another in a long line of amazing books that he's put out. And I loved it.
Nice. Yeah, he was the Man Called Oak guy, right?
Yeah.
And he did Bear Town and then the follow up on it called Us Against You. He's done a bunch and they're all different. Like they all have a very different feel and each of them is remarkably good.
That'd be a fun career to have, you know? It feels like he's just writing about what he wants to write and doing it at a high level. I like it.
Yeah, and I feel like I think he's Swedish. Mm-hmm. And all of his books are written in Swedish and then translated, which makes it even more impressive because whoever's doing the translating manages to capture like the wording and the spirit of what he's doing. And it's like a whole team effort to kind of bring the American people who don't know Swedish these brilliant books.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Swedish, this is going to sound unspeakably hipster and insufferable. But for like the last 6 months, KK and I have only watched like foreign, like subtitled crime dramas. For some reason, we've been on the like, you know, non-American.
Which means you're on the Swedish
thing,
tip,
man. Which is weird because kind of on the Swedish tip. But we're into this Belgian thing now. It's called Professor T. And it's solid, dude.
Did you just pick it for the name?
No, we picked it because our friends, the Markhams, shout out the Markhams, they're listeners. They were into it. And they actually, like, now that I think of it, they have really dialed up our, like, foreign crime show game because they got us onto this thing called Rocco Schiavone's Ice Cold Murders, which was an Italian crime show, which was amazing. So we watched all of those, and now we're on to Professor T, which is Belgian. And it's just about this eccentric, like, super socially awkward dude who's a professor, but who helps, like, the Belgian authorities solve murders. That's what we're watching, all foreign, mostly crime-related. We did this thing called... We did an Icelandic one, baby, that you would have loved, because you love Iceland. It was called Trapped.
Yes.
Yeah, you love Iceland, don't you, baby? That's a thing you're known for?
I have no idea.
Right?
I've never been there. I don't know, but sure.
I feel like you and I talk.
I mean,
about
I wouldn't
Iceland
mind going there someday,
despite having never been there.
We should go. Soon.
Yeah,
we should do it. We should do a live show there.
We should go. We should do a live show in Iceland. I wonder what our fans.
Oh, it's
like
huge. I've looked into it. It would. I don't know if they have a venue there that could contain us. So,
given that there are like 9 people that live there, I feel like 5 or 6 of them are our rant listeners, diehards. Yeah, we would do it.
Ted, can I, like, what is the difference in sort of feel and style of foreign language crime dramas versus your American crime dramas? Because I haven't done a lot of the like subtitled Italian detective thing.
I would say that the one tie that like binds all of these shows together for us is that they have at least one, usually more than one, super complex, super compelling main characters that are layered and interesting, and they let the stories unfold in a way that's kind of a slow burn, which we like. It's more Downton Abbey than like I don't know, some super fast-paced action-y kind of thing. And I like that. I like dialogue. I like really good characters. To be honest, like there's a little bit of like set design porn going on for me in it, in that like I like the interiors and the exteriors of these cities, and I don't know, it's a nice like place to inhabit, I guess is the best way to put it. Yeah.
Got it. That makes total sense.
Yeah,
to me.
For sure. Baby, what about you? Reading, watching, listening to?
Oh my gosh. It's insane.
Baby,
it's hard. It's always hard for me.
You just did 25 minutes of critical race theory, and you can't say what you're watching.
It's hard when you ask me, because I'm just like a – dude, it is. I'm like a dry lake right now with all that kind of stuff, man. It's like there's nothing – I don't know, because I'm knee-deep into like – okay, here's one. This one just came to mind.
What do you need to
– Well, I'm just doing all this classwork right now, and it's like literally stealing my soul.
Oh, that's right.
What soul I had is gone, which is a real great plug for seminary.
Well, I think you lost it by being a critical race theorist last year. So I think you're just at rock bottom now.
Dude, can I go like 1 minute?
Yeah, man, we can go. Like
I want to bounce
a
thing off you guys.
I'm like the worst guy that should be promoting it. So yeah, go for it.
Well, dude, this is the opposite of promoting it. I have like at least two buddies here in town who they both went to seminary. They went all the way through, and their take on it. They're not pastors now. Their take on it was seminary like killed my love of reading. Like I don't read anymore because of seminary. And I just wondered like what you think of that take.
It's interesting to me. So this is my third round through Sem. Okay. So maybe that's why I'm a little, how shall we say, weary.
Third.
Third exactly.
Time's a charm. Feel like
it. Anyway. So the books are getting a little bit, they're different. Like my first run through years ago, it was all academic, and now there's sort of they are blending it a little bit with less academic books mixed with academic books. But it's still it doesn't matter though, because at the end of the day, you're not reading anything you would choose to read, you know. I think that's what's I think that's what's so miserable about it. So what I'm doing is I'm squeaking in a book here and there in between all of the reading. So come January 17th, 22, I'll be able to go back and read whatever I want. But for now, I'm just kind of, you know, I'm kind of just knee deep into all this stuff. I'm in the quicksand of horrible seminary reading. But
oh, you're about to start pumping money into that music.
Oh, I'm already doing that. That gives me just a little. Yeah, no, I'm still doing that pipe because it's the only thing that gives me any sort of relief. But the last book I read was that I really enjoyed, and I read it in like 2 days, was that Eugene Peterson bio. I just kind of ate that one up. So that was a really great read for me.
Really good Instagram posts, too. I mean, just really, really scenic posing of the book.
Yeah, I did it at the beach. So like I spent 2 days just laying on the sand, and I just, man, it was like a thick book. I think Wynn Collier is the author. And dude, it was just a fascinating kind of step into Peterson's life and just sort of how, you know, kind of like the, you know, I'm basically like Peterson was, I mean, he was like the normcore pastor of all, you know, normal pastors, you know what I mean? And just for a guy that had that, for a guy that ended up being as like world renowned as he was, like by looking at his life, like even while he's like, you know, writing The Message and all that, like you would have never known that he was a person that had done anything, you know, significant other than just pastoring a church of like 200 people. You know what I mean? And so it was just really fascinating to sort of read like his life and what led him, you know, into, you know, the interest that he had. And even a dude that ended up writing the kind of like translation that he wrote, you know, with The Message. It's just, there's like a lot of contradictions, it almost feels like, in his life in some ways where, by contradictions, I don't mean that negatively, where you would just go, oh, weird, man. So you're going to write this weird translation now, you know, and it just, things just sort of happened to him, you know, rather than being like this strategic, like plotter. You know, he was just like, things just sort of came to him and he just sort of took things as they came. It's just fascinating. It was just really fascinating, which again, no social media. It was pre all of that. So his life was just kind of lived before the Lord. The Lord brought him these opportunities. And again, a brilliant minded dude, obviously. And he just was, you know, just an obedient sort of plotter, you know, with no you know, with nothing about him that from the outside you would look at and go, oh man, I just want to be like that guy. You know what I mean? So it's just, I don't know. It's so opposite to what we see today. And it was just fascinating. That's my hot take right there.
No, that's good, man. No, that's good. And I can see people today being drawn to that kind of a motif. And we probably should be drawn to it. I have a question. I have a burning follow-up question vis-a-vis the Eugene Peterson biography. I get the sense that it was comprehensive and deep dive. My question to you is, like, was there ever a time period like during the 80s where he just went by Gene? like Gene Peterson?
Yeah, like, okay, so that's a really interesting question, T, because I think he, I forget, man, like he didn't like, he changed his name back to Eugene because he thought that it was, yeah, he Goodness, thought that it was more it? Serious sounding than Gene. So he did, like, I'm probably screwing that up somehow, yeah. But like there was something to like him saying, you know what, I'm going to go back to my original name because everybody's calling me Gene and it's just like, I don't know, like he didn't like the ring to it. So he went back to Eugene. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Dude, pastor author types, man, they like.
Yeah, it's like serious. Me going back to Ronald.
That's a
it's
bit
like
of
you
a
going
deal.
Back to like Theodore or whatever.
Yeah,
whatever
dude.
Your long name is. Yeah, is it Theodore?
Yeah, I don't have a long name. It's just it's just right. Ted.
Gotcha.
That's my name. That's my long name. Yeah, that's the long and the short of it. But dude, if you
oh, it
to
would change
Ronald
everything.
For
I'd be
that
I'd
would
be too
sick,
I'd be too
dude.
Big for
like
the pod. I couldn't even be on this pod anymore if I did that. Obviously, I mean, I would be.
Dude, you should be Ronald on the cover of our.
I should just, in fact, I should just go Ronald J. Martin should be the, that should be what my author name.
Yeah, dude. For on that 2026
oh, 100%, 100%.
Release, something for
yeah.
people to look for.
I mean, I don't know if, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can only do that once you finish seminary. Yeah.
Well, I'll be Doc
time.
Martin. I'll be Doc Martin when I finish that.
You have to
that.
Earn
so
the right
the
to
name
back
on the home. Book really should just say, by the time it gets released, I will have been done with this gig for like 4 years. I'm just going to put Doc Martin on the cover. So, if that.
Dude, are you gonna do like the Dr. Flex on your like that little sliding like nameplate outside of the office in your church? Is it gonna say Dr. Ronald J. Martin?
If we had an
PhD?
Office at the church, you better believe I would do that. Yeah, 100%. I'm kidding. I would never do that.
Baby, you don't.
I mean,
have
not really. No, not in like an official office or anything. So
here's the deal, dude. We got to get you into a little office situation at your church, and we got to get you into some.
Dude,
foreign
I'm all into
dramas.
The foreign crime dramas.
That's
I hate the
bring
office
you up,
thing.
Dude.
That's not my gig. So yeah, it's not my thing. But I'll never do the doctor thing. That's my generation. Just is like we're yeah. queasy about that. T, you know what I'm saying? It's just like
Yeah, I guess, man. Yeah. You haven't achieved
right.
It,
like when RTS asked me to come and like. And but teach on something,
Ronnie,
I'll go with the doctor thing in that moment. But other than that, there's too much shame there.
Yeah.
How can you be a legitimate critical race theorist
well,
without
that's
a
the
PhD,
problem is I'm
though.
Not getting a PhD. I'm getting a demon. So I'm not, you know, so I'm already out on them.
You, yeah, but
no,
still,
you can.
You can
yeah.
still call yourself yeah. doctor. And then it just adds way, it adds way more.
Yeah, me and Tim Keller with our demons can still like, go by just, doctor.
It's super
sure.
great.
See ya.
Dude, does it strike you as weird? Here's another seminary follow-up. That demon, when you say it like yeah. that, it sounds like demon. Not to go all like Frank Peretti on it, but it
no,
really
that,
does.
We've made that joke like 77 times.
I have some
times.
Concerns
so
about
it's,
it.
So yeah, it's pretty amazing that that is really what it sounds like. Oh, yeah.
Wait, you absolutely. Have? Yeah, you just shaded
No, not at all. No, I'm saying like you're just, that's what I do
bit,
it. But I do it.
Yeah. I'm hurting a little bit over here now. Yeah. You do it. So in the like seminary community, it's a joke.
Yeah, like it's a demon. I make the joke okay. all the time, and I just say demon. I don't even.
Okay.
I just okay. I just say it. You know, that's what it is. Because, dude, let me just tell you, it feels like it. It feels like the demon on my back, yeah. man.
No, I know.
Let me tell you that much.
And that
yeah,
how ironic.
Yeah, it feels practically you know what I mean? Occultic. Yeah. It's so oppressive right now in my life. Yes.
Yes, it's oppressive to you. It's dark.
Yes.
It's occultic. It and yet it's it's a thing that you're paying
for.
Or
it's January 17th.
And reading a Wait, what happens January 17th?
Yeah, it's over. That's when January it's over. 17th. Yeah.
Baby,
so that's the date. That's the date. So
we should do our live show in
that's the last that's day the of my last yeah. class, yes. So there we go.
That's also the date of happy
100%. I can't even imagine anything more glorious.
Pencil it in.
With all nine residents of Iceland.
Dude, we're going
to Guys, if we wanted to switch from Iceland to Greenland,
exactly,
we could get like
dude.
Four people at the show.
Dude, I'm not about numbers, you know. I don't like to
right,
put a number
no, I
on
get
success.
It.
Which explains a lot about my career.
So like actually. like a mega church in yeah. Iceland would be like 27 people. It'd be epic. You know what I mean?
Dude, I love it. It would be like a dude, here's a concept for you, and I know you're gonna resonate with this because you like tiny houses. What about like a tiny mega church where like you go into it and it only seats like 27 people, but in all other ways, it still looks like a megachurch with like stadium seating and a little,
yes,
like little fake ficus trees and like a super hot little worship band. And yet it's,
dude,
like
I think that would be so epic, man. Little, I would love that so much.
Dude, that would be sick, wouldn't it? This is when I wish I was like a visual artist, dude. I wish I was like Makoto Fujimura and like paint that and bring it to life.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
He would
do it in the abstract. Be just like a bunch of colors.
It would just look like a grace. It would look like a grace.
No, that's not what I'm looking for.
Essentially. We're killing him.
Yeah. I need ultra realistic.
Well, dude, check
that,
this out. So on that, Big T, and I know we're rabbiting right now a little bit, but on that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was speaking at something like last year, and this dude comes up to me. And he's like one of like the church. He's like kind of one of the SBC church plant regional guru guys. I don't know what they're called. And he literally said to me, we were just chatting, and I said, "So man, you do a lot of travel?" He goes, "Yeah, I'm actually traveling to Iceland next week." And I went, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, no, I lived out there for 3 years." Oh. I said, "Dude, are you joking with me right now?" He goes, "No, I planted some churches out there." I go, "Dude, you planted churches in Iceland?" He goes, "Yeah, you want to come?" And I said, "Yeah." I go, is that even a question, man? I go, like, yeah. So you just, he goes, yeah, I go out there once a year because I was there for 3 years. I planted some churches. I moved back, but I go back once a year to check on them and see how they're doing. I go, dude, I go, if you're serious about that, I go, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to hit Iceland with you and I'm going to do a podcast while I'm out there. And he said, yeah, absolutely. Whatever you want.
Solid, dude.
How
let's,
epic
let's all
be?
Go. Yeah. Let's, it'd be epic. It'd be huge. We could check out some,
we'll kind of do what we're
churches.
Doing in Dallas, but doing it in Iceland.
Oh my gosh, dude! I would love that.
Pipe felt quiet. He's like, anyway.
No, pipes in on the Iceland thing.
Oh yeah, no. I thought it was a given that I was in. Yeah. I mean, especially because it's not Dallas.
Yeah, exactly, dude. Live in Dallas, live in Iceland.
Live in Iceland would be insane. We got to end this thing, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, we should. So, we've done what we always do. Actually, we've done what we haven't done in 2 years, which is acknowledge critical race theory on our program. So we've done what we never do. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Rejoice always. Pray without ceasing. Give thanks in all circumstances. God invites us to cultivate thankful hearts by turning our eyes toward Him in good times and bad. To listen to more Abide Christian Meditations, just go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Abide Christian Meditation. You can also download the Abide app for more biblical meditations at abide.com.